Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com.
I don't know what kind of day you're having, but you are important and you matter. You are crazy loved by God. And hopefully you'll be encouraged by whatever time you have to spend with us today. This is Bill Arnold sitting in for Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. And I got to tell you, Matt's on the board, Grace on the phone lines, and this is living big, being here in Susie's studio.
There's big shoes to fill.
Well, I'm just saying, there's fresh cut flowers here. There's a French press of coffee, which is not decaf, which I don't know why decaf was invented.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, I never understood that. That'll never carry over. You'll never hear someone say, kids, get your feet off the decaf table. I don't think you'll ever hear that.
I know you were really going to look forward to that pomegranate hand moisturizer.
Yes, I was. I was getting to that. There's still other things. We've got various lip balms here of different flavors. There's a massaging unit on the back of the chair. I have to tell you, it's a warm 72 degrees here in the studio. You know, I work on the weekends, and I think they shut the heat off on the weekends. Because I host... I host Road Recovery with George Fraser at 5 p.m. on Sundays, and it's a balmy 41 degrees in here on Sundays when I come in. So this is really living nice. So welcome to the program. We have a great show tonight. Today we've got Irene Garcia. She's going to be coming on in just a minute. She's written a book called Rich in Love, and you will be amazed at her story. But before we bring her on, I've got a couple of things here. Here's a note from Susie. The gum under the table is mine. Don't promote your book on my show for the simple reason you haven't written one. Oh, well, touche, Susie. That's always nice to have those little notes, those little words of encouragement, which I appreciate. But every marriage obviously goes through difficulties, and you would think that it could last at least 24 hours before the first difficulty comes up. And that was not the case with our first guest today. Here's a truth. God has the power to redeem a marriage that's full of brokenness and dysfunction. And we're going to hear a brace-yourself account of restoration this hour with Irene Garcia. And in the second hour, we're going to talk about youth, and we're going to talk about youth ministry and how to engage young people with the message of Jesus. So the million-dollar question of this hour is, what does it mean to be rich in love? So I want to tell you a little bit about our first guest. We're going to bring her onto the show. She is a tough and tender woman, from what I understand about having read her book the last couple of days. I want to go on record. I think women are more intelligent, more sensitive, and more insightful than men. You know, I grew up with four sisters, and they pretty much pounded that into me. But Irene Garcia and her husband, Domingo, have fostered or raised 32 children, many of whom have special needs. They serve in special ministries at Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California, and have begun spreading similar ministries in other areas of California, including Cornerstone Church in Simi Valley, California. You can find them online at richinlovebook.com. Irene, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Irene, I have to say, I read your book, and my emotions are all over the map, completely over the map. I would go through, and I would read a paragraph or a page, and I would put the book down and say, you have got to be kidding. You absolutely have to be kidding. And I was hoping there would be a couple of pages where I'd get a break, and there wasn't.
You know, what can I say? God just sometimes, I am so stubborn. It took all of that to get me to where I'm at now, and I'm still stubborn, so I still have a lot of those pages in my life.
I get it. So on Susie's show, she loves to always start the show by discussing a passage of Scripture chosen by the guests. Do you have one in particular you want to share? One come to mind?
You know what I do, and it's one of my favorite verses, but it's Isaiah 40, 30, 31. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fall in exhaustion. But those who trust in the Lord will find strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. And you know, that verse, I get tired a lot. I, you know, and even now I'm 62, I get weary. But you know what? That supernatural energy that God puts under the eagle, he gives us that energy. And people go, how do you get so much done? How do you do it? And it's because God is so faithful. I hold on to his hand, and he just gets me through it and gets me through those difficult times, because we are still in difficult times.
Oh, there's no question. We're going to start at the beginning, because you have so much story to tell and we have so much ground to cover. But I want to start with a quote from your book, if I may, and because it says exactly what you just said. And the quote says, "We are tired and worn out. We fall on our knees in a dark closet and plead with God for wisdom, for help in caring for so many broken children. And yet we are rich in love. I don't know why, but God chose to bring us these little ones to love and cherish. And how can you say no to God? God's gifts don't always come in ways we expect, but saying yes and accepting his gifts are the only ways for God to be the hero of the story." Say some more about that.
Pardon? I didn't hear you.
Oh, please say more about that.
You know what? That to me is like the biggest thing. So many times, you know, God will give us a gift or is bringing us something, and we think we can't accept it because it would be too difficult. And I see my children. Right now we're going to have 8 teenagers in a few months. And I look at them and I think, oh my goodness, Lord, what they are like now and what they were like before. Each one of my children has taught me an amazing thing, and God has used them to humble me and to show me who he's all about. All of his attributes and everything have been packaged in my children. And I think that if I would have turned even one of them down, it would have been a lesson I would have never learned. And so I am so thankful that even though it was difficult, and many times I did want to say, no, we have enough. I mean, you know, we have 8 kids, or we have 9 kids, or we have 16 kids. It's somebody else's turn. But now I see that it took every one of those children to teach me a life lesson that God wanted me to learn. And I still am on my knees. In fact, this morning I was up at 4:20, and the first thing I did was go into my closet. And I go and I sit in the throne room of God, and I just worship him and praise him. And then my petitions come, and I just say, Lord, please, a mother's heart is pleading you, help me deal with the issues with my children and show me their bents and how I can meet their needs and Domingos the best we can.
That's really beautiful. We're talking to Irene Garcia. She's written a book called Rich in Love, and over the past 45 years, the Garcias have birthed, fostered, or adopted 32 children. And so you're talking about how you can find strength. And your relationship with Domingo started, and he was kind of a street kid about age 11 or 12 that was living almost a little criminal lifestyle back then, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. In fact, when I met him, we were 13. He was like the bad boy of the school. I mean, he was into everything, drugs, and he just pretty much did what he wanted. But, you know, I just remember the day I went to the water fountain and I saw him, and I'll never forget. I looked up and saw him, and I said to my friend, I'm going to marry him. And I remember thinking, how dumb was that for me to say? But when I was writing the book, God allowed me to remember that, and it let me see God's hand was in my life all the way back then. I thought that was a stupid thing to say, but when I wrote the book, I realized that was God saying, look at Irene, no matter how difficult it is to go back in the past, I was there long before you even knew me. I was there. And I'm just so thankful for that.
So at age 15, you and Domingo had sort of started to meet each other on the sly, because mom and dad weren't at all excited about you hanging around with this kid.
No, my dad didn't want me near him.
Yeah. And your dad worked at a nightclub, is that right?
Yes,
he did. So he would regularly see celebrities like Sinatra and some of the bigger names. So he had his hand in the showbiz lifestyle. And just your description of him leaving in a tuxedo to go to work with that cologne on, it was so descriptive. You have so many nuances in your book that just resonated with me so much, because I was actually able to literally move into your house and live for a while when I'm reading your book. Because your writing style is so accessible and it's so interesting. So you're 15 years old and you're pregnant now with Domingo.
Yes.
And you decide that that he is going to marry you and raise this child.
Well, no, actually, when I found out I was pregnant, I had already broken up with him because I knew at that point I had already started to see a dark side in him, and I knew my dad was right. I surrendered to my father. I asked my father to forgive me, and my father and I mended our relationship. Well, I didn't know I was pregnant, and then I realized I was. And so I wasn't going to tell Domingo because I really didn't want to have anything to do with him anymore. He scared me at that point. Anyway, one of my friends ended up telling him I was pregnant. So he called me and he said, "Irene, we need to talk. We need to get together." And I told him I was going to the doctors and I was going to find out for sure. And the day that I walked into his shop to tell him that I was pregnant, I didn't know what he was going to say to me. I had no idea. I remember being so fearful. But here was this boy. Now, you have to think, he was 15 years old, and he had been working on his own since he was 11. And I tell him, I'm pregnant. And he looked at me. He didn't say anything. And then he looked at me again, and I said, "Well, what are you thinking?" He said, "Well, we're just going to have to get married. I'll have to talk to your dad. We'll get married, and I'll take care of you and the baby." And, you know, the one thing about my husband is he is so steadfast and confident. And even then, he was confident. He had no fear. I've never seen my husband fearful. And here he was, 15 years old. He put grown men to shame. He said, "I will be responsible, and I will take care of you and my baby." And you know what? He kept his word. You know, he supported us. Obviously, you read the book, and you know it was a disaster in the first 10 years. But you know what? He was an honorable young man. I mean, 15 years old, and he was willing to take us in. And he said, "I want to be married. I've always been alone, and now I'll have something to work for." And those were his words. Mm-hmm. And so at that moment, I felt safe for a few minutes anyway.
Right. So, Irene, when you found out that you were going to proceed with getting married, you're 15 or 16 at this point?
I was still, we got married a few weeks shy of I just turned 16 when we finally got married.
So you had to get permission from the doctor, a judge, a priest, and your parents?
Yes.
Okay, so the wedding day rolls around, and you have one, like, legitimate date with Domingo the night before your wedding?
Yes.
And you go to a dinner and a movie, so you've got your little courtship because you're getting married the next day, and you're 3 months pregnant. And I thought it was so sweet. You know, you had this idea that one day you'd be this bride in this white dress, but the reality is you picked out the little pink lace dress that you had that Domingo liked, and you put it on, you did your hair and your makeup, and you go into your mom's room that morning because you're going to be down at the courthouse to get married that day. And you go in and you say to your mom, "Are you going to come to the ceremony? Are you going to come see me get married?" And her response is, "No, I'm too tired."
Yeah. You know, to this day, I don't get that. I didn't get that. And all I could think of was that my mom was so upset, or my mom was a different kind of a woman. I knew she loved me, but she never told me she loved me. But for some reason, she didn't want to get out of bed and go with me to go get married, nor did my father for that. So I was going by myself. Neither one of them wanted to go with me. I mean, it was like no big deal. And so my sister ended up going with us, and we just went to the courthouse. And it's so funny because when I came back, my mom was sitting outside in the front of the house. And I looked at her and I said, "Hi, Mom, I'm sorry we were late, but we stopped to get an ice cream. I don't remember what I told her." And she looked at me. She goes, "Well, I'm not responsible for you anymore. Your Domingo is now." And the only way I could explain it was like the changing of guard. There was no emotion. There was nothing. It was just like, okay, matter of fact, okay, you're his now. That was my first education in marriage. My mother never said anything to me about what it would be like, what to expect, what I should do. It was just like, I'm not your responsibility. And I don't know. I don't know why that happened. I still don't. But my mother was a lovely woman, and it was just one of those things, I guess. I don't know.
So you were sort of cut off from your house that you grew up in, and now you're with Domingo. And usually marriages have got a little bit of a grace period where you like each other for quite a while. And you didn't really necessarily like or love him that much from day one. And the first night, this first night of being a couple, there's a little party gathering at the house that you guys were staying at. And Domingo decided that it would be best you don't attend the party. You just stay in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, wait a minute. This party's for me, too. And mm-hmm. I'd like to be there. And he took you into the room. And then what happened?
Well, it was so funny because in my mind, see, Domingo and I have talked about this now, but he was looking at it. A bunch of these guys from the shop came, and they were foul, and they were loud, and they just came to the party. And he didn't want me to be around that. But in the way I was brought up, that it would be disrespectful to Domingo's family, to the people that were giving us this little reception, and it would be a bad thing for me not to be a part of that. So when we went in the room and Domingo told me, I'm like, Domingo, I can't. I need to come out. And then I got mad and I said, no, I'm coming out. This is my party too. This is for us. And that was when I felt the fist across my face. I mean, it was so hard. I literally saw stars. And I looked at him and I have to tell you, it dazed me. I was like dumbfounded. I was like, I couldn't put things together quickly enough in my mind. And I was afraid of him. I knew that. And he walked out of the room and he said, you'll stay here. And he shut the door. And that was the first time that was one of many times, but it was the first time that I was so upset with myself. I fell on the bed and I cried because I realized that I was afraid of him. And if I had two choices, I could let fear dictate what I was going to do, or I could do what I knew was right and go out and socialize with everybody. But I felt like a coward because I let fear dictate, and I just started crying and crawled into bed and went to bed and just stayed there the rest of the night. And it was out of fear. It was really out of fear because he was strong and I wasn't that strong. And so he could pretty much put me in place as long as his fist was up. I mean, I was afraid of him. I was fearful of him.
But you're 16 and pregnant, and this is the first night really you're spending in a new home in an unfamiliar territory, and you don't know what's going on.
No, I didn't.
And Domingo is a little bit narcissistic and a little bit of an alcoholic at this point, or had he not?
He was an alcoholic.
Okay, so there's already issues with abuse and with alcohol, so mm-hmm. there's a lot of reasons to be fearful. I understand
you know,
your
I was
fear.
Very fearful. You know what? I was brought up in a Catholic home, and I was brought up in a Mexican, very traditional Mexican home. And being pregnant and not being married, this was back in the 60s, the late 60s, it brought shame to your family. And because I was Catholic, I really believed, I know this is weird, but I really believed that this was the penance, this was my punishment for having sex before I was married. And so because of that, I felt like I needed to go through all of this. This was part of it in order to make amends with God. Now, I know that's crazy, but nobody else, nobody talked to me about God. Nobody told me other than a priest and you know, you go and you do your penance and you have to do all these things. But nobody said to me, you know what, you don't have, your husband is supposed to be kind. No, nobody said that. Told me what his place was or what my place was. So I just did what I thought I was supposed to do, and that was just bear it all. That's what I thought I was supposed to do, submit to my husband and just take what he dished out.
So there's a lot of cultural things going on as well
yes.
in terms of your heritage and the time of the being in the 60s, and there's all kinds of stuff happening. We're talking
yes.
to Irene Garcia. She's written a book called Rich in Love. We have three copies to give away, and if you want to call and ask Irene a question, you can certainly do that. The number is 1-877-933-2484. Like I say, we have three books to give away. And, I want to get into how you transition from being this scared, vulnerable woman who's pregnant to having a baby and then another baby and then going out and getting her training in cosmetology. So you started cutting hair. Is that right?
Yes. I actually went to school. That was the one thing that my husband promised to my dad, that if my dad allowed us to get married, that I would go to school, cosmetology school, because that was something that we had already worked on. I was going to start school that summer. And so he committed that. So when I was 18, right after I had my second son, I ended up going to cosmetology school. And as I started to go into cosmetology school and then I got a job, I started working in an area where there was a college there, and I did a lot of college professor, women professors. And I was around women that were educated, and I started to realize, and then it was during the feminist movement, and the world was kind of shaken upside down back then. And there were all these books being written about how women were not doormats. And so I was right in that period. And all of a sudden, from the wrong people, I started learning that I didn't have to take this. I could become independent. I could make my own money, and I could leave my husband. So that was my plan. I realized that I was a person, and I didn't have to take this. And my plan was I was saving money, and I was going to get a job, I mean, get a place of my own, and I was going to leave my husband. So this is what I was working towards. So I had a plan, and I thought it was a really good plan, but I still stayed longer than I had originally planned with my husband, because when he was sober, he was a wonderful guy. It was just when he drank, he would do these things. And when he would become abusive with me, the next day, I had so many presents from him and so many, so much jewelry and things that he'd buy me to, you know, to, they were like tokens of his forgiveness. He wanted me to forgive him, and he'd apologize and he'd ask me to forgive him. So I would believe it wouldn't happen again. And then he'd go out drinking and it would happen again. So I finally got to the point where I was actually leaving my husband, but during that time is when I met a godly Christian woman. And it was during that time that I started spending time with her, and she and her husband ended up sharing Christ with me. And I wanted what she had. She was a wonderful woman, and she had something inside of her, and I realized it was because she had Christ shining brightly through her. So I ended up coming to know the Lord and thinking that God was going to give me a new husband. So I would pray, Lord, get rid of this man, take his life, and give me a new husband. Let him drive off the cliff on the way home in one of his drunken stupors and just give me a new husband. And sadly, and I say this sadly, I believe that that was what God was going to do. But thankfully, I'm so thankful for the Spirit, because by the time my prayers reached God, the Spirit had mediated those prayers, and he did give me a new husband. But what he did is he gave me a new husband in Domingo. He changed Domingo. So isn't God amazing?
He really is. And Domingo had a second DUI, and it happened about a block from your house. And he sort of begged the officer to let him go and impound my car and let me walk home. And he said, no, we're taking you in. And he ended up in jail, and I think he had a little time to reflect. There's nothing like the slamming of a jail door that gives a man an opportunity to reflect on his life. And I think it's at that point that he had a conversion and a change of heart and asked for forgiveness. Am I right about that?
You know what? He did. And it was during that time when he was in jail that he actually was he'll tell you he was a workaholic and an alcoholic. And it was during that time he stopped. And he came to a dead standstill, and he realized that he was doing to his family what his father and his father's father did to their family. It was like this endless spiral. And he realized, and he has shared with me that he was so sorry for the things that he had done to me. And he had, you know, he saw it. It was like God just brought it all into his face. And he realized that he loved his family. He loved me. And he didn't want to be that person. And he realized how angry he was at his childhood, that he just kept drinking to ease the pain. Mm. But he called me at work. And I had already started divorce procedures. And we were almost married 10 years. And I didn't love my husband. In fact, I hated my husband. That's and I share these things.
Yeah, that's a cliffhanger, Irene. We're going to have to take a break. We're going to come back and pick up the story exactly where you left off. We're talking to Irene Garcia. She's written a book called Rich in Love, When God Rescues Messy People. Be one of the three callers. You'll get a free copy, 1-877-933-2484. You're listening to Live the Promise with Susie Larson, but today it's me, Bill Arnold, sitting in for her. Thanks. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. This is Bill Arnold sitting in for Susie today. I've been trying to be as cheerful as Susie is. I've been working on that all day, and I ended up spraining my teeth. But I am holding the fort down here at Camp Live the Promise and having a great conversation with Irene Garcia. She's written a book called Rich in Love, When God Rescues Messy People. Her and her husband, Domingo, have cared for, brought in, adopted, fostered 32 children, and they're still working on it. And I find that absolutely heroic. I think they should redo Mount Rushmore. That would be my inclination, and put you up there with your husband, because I think my neighbor asked me to care for his goldfish for 3 days. It's like, what? I got to come in and sprinkle the flakes on top of the water? I can't do that. I'm just so selfish. And the way you've opened up your hearts to these children is literally heroic. But it's what God has called you to do.
It is what God has called us to do, and we are so thankful that this was, he planned these things ahead of time. You know, these were his works that he planned ahead, so it's really wonderful to be in that plan.
That's Ephesians 2:10, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, I love that. Before we went to break, you were talking about your relationship with Domingo, and mm-hmm. I want to move on to this woman, Mary, but if you can finish your thought, if you still remember it, and then...
I do.
Okay.
I do. I was just saying that my husband had asked me to forgive him, and I didn't want to. I really did not want to forgive him. And at that point, I was growing a little bit in the Lord, but I just felt like I have every right to not forgive him. And as I was driving home, I remember thinking, you know what? I have focused so much on my husband and not on my sin that I looked pretty good. And God, Jesus died on the cross for my sin and my husband's sin. And why could I not forgive him? And God, Jesus forgave me. And I realized how wrong I was. And I realized, you know, he died on the cross for both of us. And he said, this is what I want. You know, you're at a crossroads, Irene, and this is what I want. You are to forgive your husband. And I knew that I needed to do one of two things, disobey or obey God. And I knew I needed to obey him. So that was a crossroad of my life, a turning point that I really stepped, one of the first times really stepped out in faith. And I did forgive my husband. And it wasn't until almost a year later that I prayed, Lord, fill me up with love. I hate my husband. Fill me up with love. Teach me to love him. Show me how to love him. And one day we were sitting at the table, and I remember looking at him, and I remember thinking, I have fallen madly in love with my husband. For that year, he wooed me, and we spent time together, and we healed our relationship. It was the best. It's been still the best year of, we'll be married 47 years this year. And so it was the best year of our life. And I share these things about my husband with his permission because he's an amazing man. I would do it all over again to be married to him. I would do it two times over again because he is a gift from God. And I'm so thankful that God healed our marriage because now we're a team and we are working together trying to encourage people that God can fix any relationship and he can use you and you can go out and use what he's taught you and take in children and meet the needs of the orphan and those who need to be, you know, cared for. So I am so thankful for my life.
Well, I'm glad you didn't start crying because then I would have started crying and then Matt would have had it taken over.
Every time I get to that point, I do cry.
Oh, it's so tender. It's because the reasons you had against having resentment towards Domingo is there's just so many resentments you could have had. And you just felt like you hated him, and then for God to absolutely transform your heart about your husband is so strong.
You know, and I have to confess, sometimes those things, you know, I put those things locked in the vault of my heart. And when I wrote the book, a lot of those things came up. And there were things that I talked to Domingo about, and I'll never forget, he looked at me one night and he said, "I did those things, Irene. I did that to you." And he looked at me, he said, "You were such a little girl." He said, "You just wanted to go home, and I did those things to you." And, you know, it was good because we talked about those things. There were things he didn't even know he had done because he was drinking and he didn't remember what he would do. But isn't it neat how God spared our marriage, and now we're like 47 years coming up? Isn't that amazing? And we're only 62.
Well, God has the ability to fix things. There's no equal.
He does.
You said you didn't love Domingo, and then God said, "Really? Watch me go to work." You know, and it's like tag wrestling. It's like you go to the side and you tag off, and God comes in, and then all bets are off, because when you release his power, you're going to have amazing transformations, and it sounds like you have. It's just so powerful, Irene. It really is. I want to talk a little bit about Mary, the woman whose hair you were cutting, and she was living a life that you were admiring. And I guess there's something to be said about a life well lived. You can't diminish that, can you?
You know, and it's funny because there were several women who came in, and they were all Christians, but they would come late, and they would talk about their husbands and one another. And this woman was a godly woman, and she was a Titus 2:3-5. In fact, I just recently wrote a Bible study, and it was so much about what Mary taught me. And she was a woman who ended up taking me in and showing me, but by example. And I used to say things to her just to see if I could knock the socks off of her and shake her up a bit, you know, because I used to think, well, you have this perfect little family. That woman met me where I was at. She didn't put me down. She didn't judge me. She came to where I was at, took my hand and took God's hand, and then walked me through it. And she loved on me. Mary discipled me for over 30 years. It was when we moved up north, she passed away. So she never got to see this part of my life. But you know what? She was an amazing woman. She lived out the Titus 2:3-5. She loved God. It was evident. And she was an example to all of us. And she was a wonderful wife, a good mother. And boy, she just, her love for Christ just radiated through her. I mean, it was contagious.
Irene, there's nothing inconsequential in God's economy, is there?
No, there's nothing.
I mean, you are cutting this woman's hair, and who would have guessed that would have been the woman that would have led you to a saving faith in Christ?
You know, and that just goes to show you, we need to be in the world. So many of us, we have our little clutches, our Christian friends, and we go to these little church things and these Bible studies and all these things. But God is not going to look at us by how much we are, you know, tapping each other on the back. He's going to look at, are we out in the world? Are we shining those lights? Are we being those lights that we're called to be in the dark world? You know, we have banquets for ourselves, and we honor ourselves, and we praise ourselves, and we do all these things. But God is saying, no, I want you to roll your sleeves up and get up in the trenches and serve and take care of the needy and feed the poor and do these things. And so that's what we need to do. You know, you never know in your walk. We have to shine that light and make sure it's never dim in us. We have to be that beacon light so that those that are in darkness will see it, and that they will be drawn to us so that we can share Christ with them in everything that we do, whether it's to the grocery store or to the post office or cutting somebody's hair or in the doctor's office. We need to be on at all times. We need never to turn off that light.
Irene, tell us a little bit about how God placed this burden for overlooked children on your heart and your Domingo, because what you have done bringing in these children that have special needs, they've come from mothers that were addicted, they've got mental health issues, and they weren't coming in as babies. I mean, you had some of them come in as preteens and teens, and they come in with attitude into your home and give you attitude, and yet you have patience and love unlike what I've seen before.
Well, I don't want to say I have patience. I pray for that all the time. And sometimes I pray that I can show more love. But I think the one thing that my husband and I just talked about this a few days ago is that we have a lot of kids, and it's difficult, and we've taken in older kids. But what we do have is stamina and the Word of God. And we know that these kids need to be taught, and we need to help put order in their life, and we need to be the example, and we need to be firm and not waver. And the one thing that we do is that we teach them first how God loved us and that how we're his vessel and we're going to love them. But in loving them means discipline. It's not just, you know, oh, it's okay, we'll let it go. No, there's consequence for sin. And, you know, that is the one thing that we hope, that we paint a picture for these children, that they see Christ through us. But we're not always patient, and sometimes our fuse is real short because we're worn out. You know, when you get up in the morning and you have your quiet time, and I go in my closet and I spend time with God, but the minute I open the door, it's a war zone. The arrows are coming at me. You know, why didn't you do this? Why is that? Why is that? Because there's so many kids. But at the end of the day, I always tell my kids, you know what? I am not perfect, and everything I'm doing is to teach you guys who God is. And I have to never go against my convictions or the Holy Spirit. And we are not of this world. And it's going to be difficult because the world is pulling you one way. But you know what? Christ is pulling us another way, and he's going to win if we let him. You know, we have to surrender to him, you know. And so there are times I wish I could be more calm and more patient. But you know what? Every day I just do the best I can, and some days are better than others. But you know what? God is always there, and when we are stubbed, we get on our knees and we say, Lord, please. And there have been times I say, Lord, come on. My plate is so full, I can't take any more on it. And you know what he does? He says, honey, here's dessert. And you know what? Dessert is the best part, but sometimes I just think I can't take one more thing because I'm trying to hold that plate up by myself, and I'm running faster and getting ahead of God. But I have learned that I have to get behind him and let him pull me and get me through the obstacles. And there are times that I think I'm not going to make the obstacle, but you know what? If I have to take pole vaulting lessons, I will, because God is going to get me through it. I just have to believe that he will.
Yeah, I think they're running a special right now, pole vaulting and discus. You can actually do both.
I shared that with one of my friends, a close friend of mine, and I said, you know what, we're going to have to take pole vaulting lessons. And she said, sign me up.
I love it. Irene, here's another quote from your book. The book is rich in love, When God Rescues Messy People. And I just thought this was kind of along the lines of what you were just sharing with us. It says, so many times we are at a crossroads in life. We can choose the easy path and miss out on God's blessings. Or we can take the hard path knowing that Jesus is leading the way. Talk a little bit about what you and Domingo, how you have embraced that message and you've continued to take the hard road, allowing and taking kids into your home when your plate is so full already. I know it. When you use your own strength, you run out of strength quickly. But if you use God's strength, you've got a lot more.
Well, you know, somebody said to us once, how do you know when enough is enough? And you know what? Sometimes we're afraid of failure and we're fearful. So we sometimes out of fear, we say no. But something that Domingo and I are learning is that better to err on the side of action. God is going to tell us when we can no longer take in any more children. And we did at 10. We've adopted 16, and we were at 10. We have 10 in our home right now. Actually, we have 11. And somebody said, when are you going to say no? And Domingo and I felt, we never asked for these kids. Every one of these children were brought to our home. We just never said no. But now they won't give us any more kids. And so because of that, God allowed us to see, okay, this is it. You know, we're done for now. We don't know what he's going to do in the future, but for now we're done. So the thing is, so many of us, we say, okay, I'm going to pray to see if God wants me to take in children. Well, God already says in his word, take care of the widows and the orphans. So what we feel is we'll just keep taking them in, and God is going to say, okay, that's enough. And it's like that in Matthew when it talks about, you know, the wise stewards, when he gave them the talents, and one invested it, one tripled the money, one made it 10 times more. I don't remember exactly. But the thing is, when he gives us something, we have to be wise stewards. And so we just need to keep on investing, and he will, you know, he will say enough, or he will say no more. But if he wants us to take in children, they'll keep coming. So better to err on the side of action and let God say, okay, that's enough. You know, and my husband and I, we've decided we would never say no to God, that we will continue saying yes every time he brought a child. And so that's how we ended up with all the kids that we did. And we are fearful. I am more fearful at times, but I'm more fearful not to be in God's plan, more fearful to miss out on the blessings and to miss out on the good works that he planned ahead for me. I'm more fearful of not being in God's plan than saying yes to the things that scare me. I would rather say yes to God than no to my selfishness. Do you know what I'm saying? I just can't. We just have to obey God.
I get that, but I would be a little nervous every time the phone would ring. I'd get caller ID. Oh, no, here's the adoption agency again. And if I'm saying yes to everything, I'm reluctant to want to answer the phone.
You know, there was a time that I was a little fearful of that. But you know what? God just, you know, you go in that closet. I go in my closet and I say, okay, Lord, my day is overwhelming. And there are times that the air is knocked out of me. I just can't take one more thing. I mean, sometimes as the kids get older, they're big things. But God says, honey, I'm here. I'm here. Take my hand. I'll show you what to do, but mm-hmm. you have to believe that I will. Mm-hmm. He does.
Now, all of your children that you've adopted, you've loved as your own, and you have invested selfishly into their lives. And talk a little bit about your son, Joseph. That was such mm-hmm. a tender part of the book. I did have to put the book down, and I just had to pause for a minute.
You know what? Joseph came at a time in my life that I didn't want to take in any more kids. I was burnt out. We had taken in a bunch of older kids, and I thought when we went in it was going to be like kumbaya. Everything was going to be happy, and the kids were going to say thank you, and they were going to be real good kids, and everybody was going to be happy. And it wasn't like that at all. And God taught me that, you know what, look what we do. We sin continuously. We go against him, and he loves us regardless. He doesn't unadopt us. We're his children forever. So God taught me that. But it was during this hard time that I didn't want to take in any more children that my daughter had a baby, one of the kids that we had legal guardianship of. And I told her, you better take care of him. I don't want that responsibility. Well, I tried to stay away from him, and I was there when he was born, and he was a really sick little boy, and I stayed away from him. My husband brought him home from the hospital, and he would hold him, and I just didn't want to see him because I didn't want to. I was tired. I was burnt out. Well, anyway, one day my husband brought him up to my room, and he was holding him, and he was saying, look, Ninis, I'm a good boy. I drank all my food. Look at me. I'm a good boy. And I looked at him. And I realized, oh, my gosh, what a foolish woman I am. Here's this precious baby, this little boy who was so sick. And God brought him to my life. And I didn't want to hold him because I was so afraid of getting attached and being hurt. I grabbed that baby and I put him in my arms. And I raised him and I loved him. And this baby brought me so much joy in my life, that it was because of him that God opened my heart again, and I realized I was wrong and I was being selfish. It was because of this little boy God used to open up my heart and to heal my heart. For 8 years, we didn't take any more kids, just him. And he was the joy of my life. He brought me joy. Right now, he's 18, going on 19, and the joy is not quite the same anymore. But you know, he's delayed, and he makes a lot of dumb decisions. But you know what? I love that boy. And he does dumb things. But I'm always reminded this was the boy that prayed for us to have a bunch of kids. And God ended up bringing 9 more. And that boy God used to teach me, I'm going to show you how to love again. I'm going to feel that empty cup up. It was empty, but I'm going to fill it up, and you're going to be ready to be poured out once again. And that's Joseph. That is my boy, Joe.
Amazing.
You know what? We named the kids differently, but I think you were talking about Joseph, the boy. We have two Josephs. I just spoke of Joseph number two. But Joseph, number one, was the boy that God brought me and taught me to love in the beginning, who I didn't love.
Mm-hmm.
That's who you were talking about, right?
It was, actually. So if you would talk about Joseph one, that'd be great.
Well, Joseph, when he came, we went to adopt one child. And they said, I have this package deal. We have two boys. Would you consider taking two boys? And my first response was, no way. We're just in it for one. And they said, please take these two boys. And we ended up taking these two boys. But Joseph, he was a hard, hard little boy. His little brother was cute and rambunctious, but he was lovable. But Joseph was not lovable, for me anyway. And he came in our home, and he caused a ruckus in our home. And I remember one day calling up my husband saying, Domingo, this boy is my son. We've adopted him, and I do not love him. And my husband said, Irene, you are loving this boy. You are loving him agape. You are feeding him. You are caring for him. You are doing all the things God has called you to do. You wait, honey. One day you are going to love this boy emotionally. Well, one day, quite a few years later, he was walking me to the bus. I was going away for camp. And I looked at this boy, and I realized that I had fallen in love with this boy. My husband was right. And this boy gave me a hug, and I remember saying to Joseph, son, you are flesh of my flesh. I love you with all my heart and soul. And I got on the bus to go to camp, and they stayed home. And I got a call from camp that there was an emergency at home. And when I drove down from the camp, my husband and my boys were there waiting for me. And this is when I found out that Joseph had strangled in the closet. He had died. And it was, there's no way I can explain to you the pain and the way that I felt, because it was like God showed me that I could love this boy. And I learned that week that I had fallen in love with him, and it was that week that God said, okay, now I'm taking him with me. And it was that boy that I learned after that it didn't matter how they came. That still doesn't matter, because when kids first come, you don't love them like you love your own children. You have to build memories that you don't have. Like when you have a baby, you have all those sweet times. But when they get older, you can bank on those sweet times. It's like money in the bank. But when you adopt children, you don't have that. So you have to really work hard to build those memories. And so when a child first comes, I always remember Joseph, because I remember that I'm not going to love them at first. And it takes a while to have that emotion. Yes, I love them, agape love, and I serve them, but that emotion doesn't happen till later on. And so I always say this to parents, when you take in those children, don't think that you're going to fall madly in love with them and you're going to have these, you know, overflowing emotions. That's not what happens. You have them and you have all these negative things, but in time, God teaches you to love them the way he wants them to love. And we love through him because his love never fails and it's outpouring. Our love doesn't go that way, but his love does. And God used actually two Josephs. One, he taught me how to love and that I could love. And the other one, when I thought I could no longer love, he used the other Joseph to fill my cup back up to love again.
Mm-hmm. Irene, let me give the listeners an example. There was a brother, Felix, and he came into your house. How old was he when he came into your home?
He was 14.
Okay, he was 14. He walks into your home and says, where's my room? And he said, I don't have to do anything. I don't want to. I have a lawyer. I have rights. Whoa.
Yeah, and he was as tall as I was. He was a big guy. He wasn't even a little guy.
Mm-hmm.
you know, he walked in my house. I'll never forget that. He walked in, and he had a strut, and you would have thought he had an entourage behind him, like he was somebody, something. And I remember my heart was beating so fast, you could hear it pounding in my head. I was wondering if the social worker heard it. But he walked past me, and he said, "Where's my room?" And he was so disrespectful. And I remember there was this anger that came in from inside of me, and I had to just hold it down. But when I spoke to him, I remember saying, "You know what? You and your rights can get out of my house." And I didn't say it nicely. I didn't say it with kindness. But I remember he looked at me and he was a little stunned. But the sad thing is, these kids come in and that's the thought that they have, like, we owe them. And he wasn't looking at it from the perspective that we took him in because we wanted to help him and to love him. He looked at it like, okay, what are you going to give me? Mm. And I have rights and I want it now. And that was hard. That was really hard. That was a rude awakening for me.
I bet. I mean, we don't have much time left, but I'd love for you to encourage people who might be considering the adoption process, caring for an orphan the way you and Domingo did on so many occasions. What kind of word of encouragement do you have for them?
You know what? I would encourage anybody. People a lot of times will say to my husband, you know, we can't do it. You guys are special. And that's not true because my husband, you read my story. We are not two special people. But the thing is, I can promise you that you taking a child, an adopted child, and bring one into your family, there's no better way that you can teach your other children Christ, who Jesus really is, in a living way. And it is scary, and there's a lot of negative things. But you know what? God is faithful. You want to see God in action? You want to have a front row seat seeing Jesus doing his work? Take in a child or two. You know, not everybody can take in 10 kids, but everybody can take in one. And our whole thing is, you know, there is such a need. We would love to see the debt of the orphans wiped out, not just in our country, but in the world. And it doesn't take anybody special. All it takes is two knee pads and a Bible. And if you have that and you're on your knees and you're using God's word, you can do it. And there is a need. And let me tell you, the blessings far outweigh the heartaches. It is an amazing venture.
You are amazing, Irene. I so enjoyed your book, and I want to encourage the listeners to pick it up, Rich in Love, When God Rescues Messy People. We've been talking to Irene Garcia and her story, which has been amazing today. So I just want to thank you for being on the show, and thank you for listening today to Live the Promise. I know you probably tuned in hoping to hear Susie, and you got me, so I appreciate you sticking with me. Thanks very much, everybody. We've got a great second hour coming up with Duffy Robbins. Stay tuned.